You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the IUBase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
Yoanna Richardson launches it out to left center. Piacentino is back at the wall. Goodbye! Home run!
Welcome. We're recording this on Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. I'm Cassie Palmer, and I'm joined by Master of the RPI, Carl James, and the man who only cheers right after the national anthem now, Chris Feeney. Josh Bennett has the night off. Well, it was a 2-1 series win in the rivalry series against Purdue. The series win paired with Michigan going 2-2 in their pod, which allowed Indiana to take over sole possession of first place in the Big Ten Conference standings. Tommy Summer got the call on the Friday bump for the Hoosiers. Some control issues led to a bases loaded situation in the first, and an HBP brought a run in. Tommy then got out of the inning with two strikeouts. Summer settled in and kept his pitch count low enough to get through 6 2/3 innings, having only surrendered two hits and that one run, while striking out a career-high 12, walking three, and hitting two boiler batters.
Very frustrating outing for myself. Obviously, I feel a lot of responsibility for putting us in a tough position to start the game, to start the weekend. You know, as a Friday night starter, you want to come out and really be aggressive and set the tone for our team, and I failed to do that, which was frustrating for myself, and that really just going back to the basics and simplifying what I was doing. I felt like I was trying to do a lot, doing too much, which kind of put me in a tough position and really had me struggling to find the strike zone, which is very uncharacteristic for myself. So I was frustrated with that. Just tried to short my stride a little bit to get myself out front, clean the arm action up, and just get out in front and really try to spin the baseball down in the zone and with some life eventually.
Nathan Stahl finished the seventh and pitched a quick eighth to earn the win. The Hoosiers finally strung together some hits in the bottom of the eighth inning. Jacob Southern went to the opposite field with a single that scored Paul Tate. And then Matt Litwicki shut the door in the ninth, touching 99 miles an hour. And the Hoosiers won the game 2-1. Digging out of two holes in a row against the Big Ten's basement dweller was just too much on Saturday when everything seemed to be going right for Purdue. McCade Brown was sitting 91 to 92 miles an hour, touching 93 with a fastball-heavy mix. Purdue had no trouble with that fastball in the third inning, as Brown was struggling to throw his 80-mile-an-hour curveball for a strike.
I think he just wasn't able to control his off-speed today and the way he had it passed. And I didn't think he was pressing. I just think that he was trying to get through what he could. And I tell you what. Tip your cap to Purdue. Those guys did a really good job. They laid out some tough pitches. They really made them work, really put them under pressure. So I have to tip my cap to Purdue at times as well.
The Hoosiers cut the lead to 5-4 when Kip Fugers drove in Tate's with a double in his first college at-bat. Purdue gradually extended the lead after that, and a final comeback attempt came up just short in the bottom of the ninth, and Purdue won 8-5. The Sunday rubber match was decisive, with Indiana winning 9-4. The key hit came from senior Jeremy Houston on a 3-2 count with two outs and bases loaded in the second inning. That hit drove in two to tie the game. It was all Hoosiers after that.
I'm just trying to stay within myself, not trying to do too much, and help the ball club as much as I can. Today I was fortunate enough to get a changeup up. And I put a good swing on it, and we got two runs from it. So. You know, it's always nice to help the team out any way you can, and I just so happened to do it again today, so it was a good feeling.
Gabe Bierman battled, giving up four runs, three of them earned, in six innings of work. Ty Bothwell added two shutout innings, and Litwicki was back again, lighting up the gun to end it. Five players had multi-hit games, with usual suspects Drew Ashley, Paul Tate, and Grant Richardson leading the effort. Richardson had a monster solo shot over 400 feet to dead center in the third inning. Ashley's hits made this his 36th game in a row that he has reached base. And Colin Hopkins added his first two hits of the season, including a two-run home run in the eighth. So there was a little bit of a mixed bag this past weekend, but there was quite a bit of good to it. For me, a Hoosier highlight was definitely the response on Sunday. It's always tough to drop a game to Purdue of all teams, but especially when you're at the top of the conference, it really sucks to lose to Purdue. And on Sunday, after that third or fourth inning, the game seemed to pretty well be in hand the rest of the way. There was never too much doubt or concern. The pitchers only gave up three earned runs, and one of those came on a wild pitch. So I'm not upset by that at all. And the bats added 14 hits, hit for 400 for the game. To see that kind of response after a not so nice loss, that was my highlight. Chris, what about you? What's your Hoosier highlight?
Thanks, Cass. I agree with you, what you're saying, as far as it's not a, you know, we won the series 2-1. I get it. Going in there, you wanted a sweep. The last two games were like the closest games we've had with Purdue at the Bart in for a long time. We usually take care of business against them. And then to have these games up in the air late, it just didn't seem right. You know, we usually just kill these guys. And that's the way it should be. And that's how I want it to be. But for my Hoosier highlight, I'm going to go with Kip Fougers. I know he played the field, I think, in one series or in the first weekend. But to see his progression through high school, we've been following him for a while, whether it was him coming in, you know, playing at Bloomington South, or then he got to play at the Bart, hit the bomb off Luke Hayden. And just watching him grow and get bigger and watching him in the summer league, and man, he looks like a ball player. Kip came out there, you know, first at bat, drives in Tates, makes it 5-4. I thought we were going to catch him and just pass him on Saturday. I really thought that was going to ignite the offense. It didn't. We ended up giving up some more runs. But seeing Kip out there playing, he had another, I think it was 10 pitch at bat on Sunday. He had a nice hit up the middle. And I listened to I think it was Dan Held at the post game. He was talking about like our big approach as a team this weekend was to hit to go, you know, gap to gap, to go up the middle. And if you watch just about everything Kip did, that's where he was hitting the ball. And as a freshman, to jump on the approach that quick, I thought was huge. You know, he looks like a ball player. He's picking it up quick. And yeah, is there some work to do at first? Probably. You know, I'm not like a first baseman aficionado. Did things look perfect over there? No, but it's not going to. It's your first D1 experience at first base. But, you know, energy in the dugout. He was DHing on Sunday. I noticed that. He got to play the role, you know, when they were doing the lineups. All the guys had to jump into him. Like, you think that might be a little awkward for, like, a freshman. But no, you could tell he's part of the team. You could tell these guys know that Kip Fougers is going to be a part of this baseball team if it's going to be successful. I really do think that. So watching his debut is a big Hoosier highlight for me for the weekend. What about you, Carl?
For me, I'm going to talk about Paul Tates. I mean, he's almost becoming Mr. Automatic. You look at all the scoring descriptions, and he always seems to be involved, whether he's scoring runs himself or he's driving guys in. He was 5-for-13 on the weekend. In two hits, two games, he had two hits apiece. And he just a lot of the time they come in important key times of the game. And he's been a big piece of the mix and a big reliable, almost just as I said, Mr. Automatic. It'll be curious to see if he can maintain that going forward, as obviously there's going to be, you know, more film out on him. That's always the one thing you want to look at is do teams make adjustments to guys who do so well? But then that gives the opportunity for him to make adjustments as well, which today that's something Mercer talked about a ton, was how quickly he adjusts when things don't go well and improves things. So I'm going to talk about Paul Tates. Okay, I'm going to hand it over to Cass now.
Yeah, and it is now mailbag time. And in a new refrain of our popular question of the season, So, Carl, this is going to come to you. Is there any news if IU baseball supporters will soon be able to attend games?
Did I do something to be the one to always get asked this question? Other than volunteer. Okay, I get it. okay. Well, first of all, yes, there is news. And that news is that the Big Ten has declared they are hands off now. The conference is saying it's now up to the local counties and the local institutions to determine what this is going to be like. That news came today, so we have no other news to report. I think it's positive news, and I think it's a positive possibility that things could turn around here in the next couple of months, possibly even in the next few weeks. But I have no information one way or another how that's going to go, which way Indiana is going to determine to go on that. And I say Indiana, that's Indiana University, and it's also Monroe County. So those two organizations are going to be the ones that are going to make a determination as to how open this is going to be. I think Indiana Athletics has got multiple things that they're looking at. For one, there are already hundreds of people. They're not core fans. They're not ticket holders, but they are, family, professionals, staff, scouts. You know, you have someone like McCabe Brown, and you're going to have a lot of scouts at these games. Media like us. There's already a decent number of people, physical bodies at the field at this point. And there's a number that's going to be capped at. And I don't know exactly what that number is going to be. And then after that, Indiana's going to have to determine if they are going to let people in. There's a logistical concern. How many are you going to let in? How are you going to limit it? How are you going to sell a limited number of tickets? There's a lot of those questions and concerns that are going to be out there as to how that's going to work. And I don't know that. And I don't know if they've planned on that. The thing that gives me pause most of all is that, that just not that long ago, they made the announcement that the Little 500 was going to be without fans. I could see some trepidation with, hey, if we open up spring sports to fans, why can't we open up the Little 500 to fans? I don't know if that kind of trepidation is going to be out there. I don't know. But that would give me a little bit of pause and concern. We will keep obviously very much on top of this. If a change comes out, I get the sneaking suspicion I will get this question again in next week's podcast.
In 9 different versions. We've never had a question come through this many different ways this many times. We should keep like an Excel chart of all the different changes. Right, there's a slight change. There's like emojis that are still the same that people are putting in, like the pray sign and all that. Everybody has a different way to ask it. I wish we had more. I mean, just to throw in what you were saying, Carl, when I look at the stadium, when I'm there, I see the signage and I see all the, these rows can never be seated in. And there's all the things that say, like, keep clear, wear a mask, social distancing. I feel like that gives me a little hope, to be honest. But if it is about the county, okay, we just saw VCU get kicked out of the NCAA tournament because of the Marion County thing, because the games were being played in Indianapolis. They had positive tests, and they didn't get to play in the tournament. So if it's all about Monroe County and not so much the state, take that for what it's worth. Maybe we won't be allowed. I'm not sure. But when I walk around that stadium, it seems prepped to give it a shot. But just someone has to let them, I think.
Yep. I would say this has not been determined yet. There's a lot that's going on. There's a lot of things they're trying to focus on. With baseball, as was announced, baseball is dealing with the fact that Coach Mercer has just gotten back from his isolation period. But now Coach Parker and Director of Operations Sagerman both tested positive for COVID. And they are in isolation right now. So IU has kind of been dealing with that piece of it and trying to make sure that the staff and the team remain healthy. So that is probably made it to where they're not going to necessarily jump the gun on a decision like that. But also, they're on the road for a couple weeks. So that gives them a little bit of time to hopefully to kind of work it out and see if that's a possibility. But again, there's a lot of things have to go right before this happens. And then there is the difficult decision of how do they limit it if they do open it up. And they may find that it's just an easier decision to keep things the way they are. I just don't know.
I will say another, from my perspective, I have fun perspective on all of this. The fact that Indiana is opening up vaccines to everyone 16 plus very soon, that could also end up playing a role in any eventual decision. But that's still probably a little ways off before it really comes into play in the decision making. Yep.
I would say I do hold out hope that if IU were to go on a huge tear, a really big tear, and dominate the league and beat Michigan and beat Ohio State and beat Michigan State and all these better teams and be in a position, you know, with maybe an 800 record and be able to host a regional, you know, I would think I would be very positive in thinking that the situation would be at the point at which fans would be permitted for a regional type environment. But again, that is just me projecting. And if you followed my various projections, including those in RPI, you'll know that sometimes I am dead wrong. So,
but you've been right a lot too. You've been right. And look how careful they're being. We noticed changes from the Saturday afternoon to the Sunday afternoon, right? They weren't letting anybody down for the first three rows to even take photographs. You know, I got asked to leave from there. Their own staff were asked to leave from there. Sunday, we were watching the players weren't picking up each other's bats. You know, the guy hit a bomb. He had to pick up his own bat. You know what I mean? These guys were obviously doing things safety in mind.
Yeah.
Right? And listen, they're going to do whatever they have to do. You know they want the fans in the stands.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And come on, are we an SEC team bringing in 10,000 a game? No. But they're going to get pumped up with, you know, those 3K nights at the bar we talk about sometimes. You know, they're not that much. But when you get that 3,000 at the bar on a warm summer night, spring night, however you want to call it, I'm sure it pumps the players up. Maybe Litwicki will throw 104.
Yeah. I think the North Star for the big for the teams in the Big Ten right now is to play 44 games. Mm-hmm. So that everything is going to kind of be guided off of that.
Yep.
And that's going to be what I think, again, gives them maybe a little bit of pause because the goal is to get those 44 games in.
And get them in safely.
Yep.
Was it Greek kills, right?
Yep. All right. I think we've beat that horse enough. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Chris, who's got some belts to hand out. Go, Chris.
Listen, Carl, you can never beat the red belts enough, okay? Red belts are a great turnaround for any subject, even when you're upset that you can't go to the game, whatever the case. So we got three awards to give out for this week against Purdue. It's nice to win a red belt against Purdue, I would have to think, if I was a player, because I know they care very much about winning these red belts. So the first pitching red belt, the Joey Donato Award. Some say he got robbed from it last week. I heard many debates on social media on it. Should McCabe Brown have won the one last week? Tommy Summer picks up the red belt. Not only did he have a rough start in the game, so it shows that he could bounce back, but that post-game interview, he cared so much. The man, it seemed like he felt bad about his performance. My man, you threw almost seven innings. You had the most strikeouts you ever had. I think, I don't have it in front of me, I'm not going to lie, I think he had like two hits. Mm-hmm. After the first inning, I don't think he walked the guy. Maybe one. He was dominant. He was dominant after that start. So to me, and I just love some of watching him pitch. He's crafty. You know what I'm saying? We've been watching him for a while. And it doesn't have to be the start of game. We've seen him come in some nice relief outings and do really well for long periods of time. But I'm telling you, I was watching this press conference. You would have thought the guy gave up six runs and got pulled in the third inning. That's how much he cares, and I thought that was cool. So Tommy gets the Donato Award. For the hitting award, Carl stole a little of my fire with the Hoosier highlights with Paul Tates. But his numbers, man, big time. Carl mentioned that he got hits in two games in a row. He got on base two times in the other game, so he got on base twice in every game. He wears the high socks, which I'm always a fan of. That gets you, you know, very special for the red belts. Really, what have we seen that he couldn't do? I know that this is an offensive award, this red belt, but he, you know, playing some great D at second base, turning some nice double plays, no matter the partner that he's had at short. He's had some different partners over there. But he's really held his own. I know he's not a freshman. He is a freshman, okay? He didn't play last year. He wasn't going to play. He was redshirted. We knew that, you know, after they announced it. So this is his first taste of D1 baseball. And he didn't come in with a lot of fanfare. He really did not. Weren't even sure what position he would play. You know, we knew he was an infielder. He was a big third baseman in high school. But he wasn't like the name or the star that was coming. But anytime you ask coach about, you know, up-and-coming newcomer, it's Dallas Paul Tates every time. Jeez. You know, the scouts couldn't have been more wrong. And again, you know, I've learned to step back a little bit with the hot starts. You know, I could fall in love with a guy's hot start. You know, I'll put a cape on him real quick. Kalathan knows that. But it's just impressive. And he definitely earned it from this series, the offensive red belt, the Alex Dickerson Award red belt. And for defensive, there were a few choices. I thought we played some good defense. It got sloppy. There were some sloppy moments. The highlight had to be Jordan Fucci down the line again. I feel like a broken record because it was basically the same thing that he did for the other award. But this one, he didn't even have to throw it over. You know, it was even a more impressive play at first. He had some nice scoops at first. Seems much more comfortable. It seems like he's learning the game more at first base. There's been a couple of throws he's had to make. And okay, are they perfect? No. But they're the correct throws where they're not rushed and trying to do, you know, too much. All right, if you know you're not this old, like Keith Hernandez can do too much at first base. Don Mattingly can do too much at first base. You can make that risk because you know you can pull it off. Knowing your role is also important, right? He knows his role. He knows what he can do. But him diving down that line again, man, that looked like a repeat of last week. So you got Fucci again. We got Paul Tates and Tommy Summer for this week's Red Belts. For the Michigan State coming up soon, I don't know how much of a rivalry it is. It used to be a big rivalry when Schwarber and Travis and them were here. I know they got some real, real tight, feisty games. So we'll see how this series goes. So three well-earned awards. And I got to give Cass an award for the week, too, for the travel. All right, she makes it down. She gets in as a media member. She kept her stats. She brought all those colorful pens. I had Cass to the left of me on his table. I had Caller to right. I'm telling you, I used to tweet stuff out in these bleachers. It was just me. I don't even know if half the stuff was right, you know. But having them right there was a good time. Cass, I'm glad you made it. And what's your stats update for the Purdue series?
Okay, well, I'm looking more of a big picture. I'm still working to catch up my stats around my normal day job, which has been crazy this week. But looking at some season stats that stand out, on the pitching side, the staff is still at 11.5 strikeouts per game, which is still pretty nuts. And that translates to, I actually looked at this, they're striking out 1 in 3 batters that they face right now. And that's not at bats, that is batters faced. That includes the walks, the HBPs, the sacrifices, 1 in 3. That is, you'll occasionally get one, maybe two guys who are striking out in that range, usually guys who are an inning or two at a time. To have a staff that's striking out 1 in 3 batters is crazy. And another thing on the pitching side that stuck out, the staff still has an opposing batting average below 150 at 146. That is really, really good to see. And the extra base hits continue to be in the 30s%. Those are really good indicators that along with the strikeouts, teams just are not making contact. And when they do, it's not good contact. On the offensive side, did a little math, and 38% of the offensive hits are going for extra bases. And that's kind of in the high end of the range of generally sustainable for a full season. You'll see blips early on where it could be like, 50, 60% are going for extra base hits. That's not sustainable. That's going to find its level. 38% is ballpark of the high end of that. This could be a legit number range. And helped by that, helped by the preponderance of extra base hits, the Hoosiers have actually only hit into 3 double plays so far this season. Just because there's not many opportunities to hit into double play if you have a man on second. If they're avoiding first base altogether, that cuts out a lot of double plays. And so that definitely stood out to me, seeing just 3 so far through, I think it's 11 games. So that's my little bit of stats tidbits for the week. Carl, what else happened in the Big Ten this past week?
Well, the biggest news in the Big Ten was that Michigan hosted a pod this weekend and split. They split with Illinois, and they split with Michigan State. And if it wasn't for, if that had been a 7-inning game instead of a 9-inning game, they would have lost that game 7-0. Michigan State had a 7-0 lead going into the 9th inning when Michigan scored 8 runs in 1 inning to walk off that. And for that point, that kept them in the, that kept them as the number 1 team in the Big Ten. They did play on Monday. Michigan State shut out Michigan 3-0. And so that was interesting on multiple things. Number one, Indiana is number 1 by themselves in the Big Ten right now. But I say you caution that because of the level of competition that IU has played right now. But it's really difficult among these teams in the middle to know who is really strong. Michigan State, I mean, you look at their schedule, and yeah, they won a series against Maryland. They've now split with Michigan and really kind of outplayed Michigan over this period. The team that is considered
to give
up
1 inning of runs, Carl.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? 18 innings. Michigan scored in 1 inning.
Yes. Is that and correct? Those were the third and fourth games of the weekend. So this is when you would expect the pitching depth to not right. be there. Against an offense.
So they scored 8 runs in the 9th in game 1, mm-hmm. and then the shutout in the 2nd.
Yeah.
They scored in 1 inning and 18 at home.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Michigan State has some arms, and like you said, back end too.
Yeah. But then you look at the fact that they lost 3 out of 4 to Northwestern. But Northwestern is 7-4 right now. So they split with Penn State, they won a series against Minnesota. That is not a question for me. Minnesota, I don't know what happened there. Minnesota's not has not been great this year at all. So that has been a less than ideal situation for that squad. But you know, you look at Illinois, you look at Rutgers at 6-5. Ohio State's maybe underperformed a little bit, 6-5. I think the next 2 weeks for IU are going to be very telling. Michigan State, this is a huge test for Michigan State and Indiana at this point. Michigan State may be the real deal. Now we get a really big test. After that for IU is going to be Ohio State. And, you know, Ohio State was supposed to be the team with the best pitching depth. But Michigan State has already proven that they've got arms to go all weekend. Overall, I think IU has shown at this point to have the best overall pitching from a statistical perspective. But now we're going to have to see it against a higher caliber of competition. So we look at Michigan State. D1 baseball actually got a look at them. They were at that. There was a D1 baseball writer at that pod this weekend, really focused on 2 players. You know, they're big prospects mostly. Mason Erla, the right-handed pitcher, one of those guys that probably would not be here if it wasn't for COVID, would have gone in the draft. I mean, last year, barely above 1 in ERA, 42 strikeouts in 26 innings. He was off to a huge start. He's 6'4 from the right-handed side. He sits 91 to 94. He's got a slider at 83 to 87. So he's somebody that I think we're expecting at the pitch Saturday. So probably going to pitch Saturday against IU, I would assume as well. But, you know, I suppose to some degree that remains to be seen.
Their that would guy be Brown. They released today. It's
oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah, they released it today. It's going to be Tommy Brown and Bierman.
Okay.
You know, so Bothwell gets pushed to the pen again in however capacity they want to use him, as a long man or Scotty F. Frost or whatever they want to do it. And Erla, that guy, he started the game, the Big Ten tournament game, that Gorski ended up hitting the bomb in to tie it. Okay. We were down like three. He started the game, and he dominated us. We could get it. I mean, this is 2 years ago, but he was the real deal then, and I think he was just a sophomore then. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't touch him at all in that game. We came back all late.
Yep. The guy that really impressed in the field is the right fielder, Zald Walker. He went 7-17 on the weekend. His slash right now for the season is 422, 449, 622. And he's got 10 RBIs. So, and there's a, clearly there's a lot of good bats on this team. And I mean, splitting with Michigan is a positive there in Ann Arbor, but the fact that they practically beat them twice, that's, this is going to be a real test for IU. Well, I'm very curious to see how this goes, and this is going to be at Michigan State's, at Michigan State's place, with their new lights again. so that's what we got so far. It's just a couple of key pieces. Those were the ones that that stood out the most that D1 reported on. You know, of course, they've got a lot more than that. We'll be curious to see. I sometimes don't like to dig too much into the entire team's set of numbers because it's still 3 weeks in. The sample sizes are very small. And like I mentioned before, the deeper we get into the season, the more videos available on these guys. So that's the thing we're going to look at, you know, our new hot hitters. How hot are they going to remain once the scouts are out on them? Can they adjust? Can they improve things? And the same thing is going to go for the opposing teams. You know, we know that, that we've got a really good group of coaches that that really take the time looking at video and figuring out how to pitch these guys, how to play them defensively, what's the best way to take advantage of the, you know, of the individual weaknesses that they have. Well, for now, we're going to go ahead and move on to our roundtable. As we've discussed, Indiana did win the weekend series, but dropped the Saturday game. I'm going to throw in an oldie but a goodie and let Kyle Schwarber talk about what the expectations are for a series like this.
We never really want to, you know, we take that as losing a series to us right now. And, you know, it's disappointing for us. And, I mean, we're gonna work through a lot of things. And, you know, it's you know, that's good for us 2 years ago that we took a series. Now that we're expecting sweeps, especially at home. And so, you know, we got to live up to our expectations of what we want to do and play Indiana baseball.
Absolutely. Was not looking at this weekend as the way it was going to go. And you're saying, you know, not a series sweep, but we won the series. We barely won Friday. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like we won 14-1 on Friday and 10-1 on Saturday and then got sloppy on, you know, in the middle game. These were dogfights with a team that I'm sorry, I didn't think it would be, all right? You know, I read a lot or heard a lot of JUCO transfers, this, that, and the third. We had the top five players on that field. We had the top five pitchers on that field, you know, if you're going to draft them. It just didn't make sense to me. And I know a lot of people were saying, you know, we were down coaches and stuff like that, and it wasn't reported, but we were there. We could see who was bringing the lineup card out, who wasn't in the dugout. You know, it's their business to report hip and stuff like that when they want to. And, you know, they waited till I think actually earlier today to kind of map it out. But, yeah, they were short. some coaches in the dugout. So some prep work and whatnot wasn't there. And I know Coach Simmons and Coach Howell had a ton of extra work. And I think they did a great job. I can't find any major decisions or anything like that, or that we didn't look prepared. It was execution. Now, is that us taking the opposition a little light? Maybe. But when you have a rivalry of Purdue, you shouldn't be doing that anyway. I was disappointed, I'll be honest. I wanted the nice laugher weekend, three beatdowns, and keep an eye out on the March Madness. Maybe even keep a little more extra eye on the March Madness brackets because we're killing them so bad. But you couldn't. We're down to our last at-bats, and what's going to happen in the eighth? And I'm telling you, very unexpected weekend for me. I'm not going to say disappointed, like I'm disappointed that, but if you would have told me before the series, like, gone to your head, it was easily a sweep. I don't think I would have put a game within four or three runs. I know someone's going to tell me, oh, it's baseball, you never know. I do know, okay? I know the arms we have. I know the bats we have. And I know the style that this regime plays. And I don't think they expected to lose a game. And I surely don't expect they think that the one of the games we win would be by one run, pulling it out in the eighth inning. So, and it is what it is. But if you want to run through this big conference, sweeps are the way to do it.
Yep. Well, and for the most part, I'd say that I'm looking at two things. Looking at the pitching, for the most part, there's so much good going on with this pitching staff. And yeah, there were a couple stumbles here and there this week. What really makes me feel good about it, though, is that while, yes, that third inning for McKay Brown was rough, but the fourth and fifth were awesome. So he immediately figured it out, and he had a really solid fourth and fifth inning following that. You've already talked about what Tommy did after, oh my goodness, he gave up a run.
He sounded depressed. He was emotionally hurt. He's like, I let my team down. Talk about a foxhole guy. If you care that much about,
And
I hear what you're saying about Brown. Definitely. I agree with Brown. He did bounce back really well. I don't mean to put it on kids' performances. It's not about that. I think it was the mentality that we were going to have a laugh for weekend, and we didn't. To me, that was disappointing. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I also kind of feel that this team, from an offensive perspective, feels a little bit more like the 2019 team than it does the 2020 team. I was so encouraged a year ago after the first few weeks. Well, the only few weeks. This team was not waiting to get to a bullpen in order to produce offense. And that was not the 2019 team, especially on those first couple games of a series. It was like, let's get those pitch counts up and get that starter out of there, because that's going to be the chance to win. And I agree, it's a chance to win. And I understand that it's a strategy and it needs to continue. But it just feels like there's a little too much reliance on that at the moment. I really want to see... I want to see this team, get to Urla, get to a guy of that type of caliber, and have have it to where this guy's on the ropes after 40 to 60 pitches, not at, 85 to 90. that's where I would. And I think this team is capable of that. I think they've shown flashes of skill where they've managed to get a couple hits, but not necessarily get the big hit to drive things in early and really put pressure on a team early.
I think it's the who, though, Carl, right? Isn't it the who? I feel like you look at the Sunday box score and you see Barr, Richardson, Tates, all with like two hits, two runs, three RBIs, the home run. If they're all going to pick a game to perform, it's going to be hard to knock that starter out, right?
Yeah.
If they can all do that on a Friday, there's your wish, right? There goes Earl out early.
Yeah.
But there's been some games where these guys have not shown up, right? There's games where there has been no Cole Barr, there has been no Graham Richardson. There has been no Paul Tate. We don't expect it from Tate's, obviously. But you look at Sunday, we had it from all three of them, and that was the comfortable game.
Yeah.
I don't think – is that something you could expect every game? Probably not. But when all those Pistons are firing in the middle of the order, that's when you get to the Friday guy.
Yeah. I'm not expecting it from every game, but in 2019, it almost felt like it was rare that those pitchers were challenged, that it was if Indiana was going to compete in those games, it was going to be in the late innings.
Right.
And oftentimes that was enough. You get to that bullpen and suddenly the bats catch on fire. We think back to the 2019 Minnesota series, that Saturday game where it looked like the series was lost. And then, you have a couple of bombs, you get a couple of walks, and then Lloyd does his heroics.
You're better on Sunday, and you know you're better on Sunday. So you know the flip going to continue to, or was it? I think it was Timmy Herron that day. Throwing a jam in South Frank the next year, and now we have Gabe Bierman on a Sunday. The point is get to those Friday, come out hot early, get on middle of the bats early, come out early. Because we're sitting there on Sunday, we have the advantage of everybody, I feel like.
Well, a big difference I'm seeing Friday to Sunday, I've pulled up the box scores. It's that bottom of the order. It's not necessarily just the 2, 3, 4, 5 hitters. On Friday, I mean, you've got 9-hole 0-for-4, 8-hole 1-for-4. 7-hole 0-for-4.
But you expect it from them?
No, but
what was the middle of the order?
But 1-for-12 in the bottom of your order is not going to help any. Whereas
what was the middle of the order in that game?
Let's see. There were a lot more pinch hits. So just a second. That's one.
I just feel like, I expect it from the middle guys. When they don't come through, it just feels like a lost opportunity. Yeah.
Well, that first game.
0-for-2, 1-for-3, 0-for-2.
Yeah, so one hit out of the middle of the order.
Yep. Whereas on Sunday, bottom of the order, 1-for-2, 2-for-4, 2-for-4. Your bottom of the order hit .500.
To me, that's all gravy, though. We got to have it from the middle.
It is, but I think to really hit that Friday guy, you've got to have at least one guy in each third who's at least hitting something. Having one hit out of your middle three and your bottom three is not gonna.
No, and it was produced Friday guy. I mean, it wasn't even like a national name.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Friday was we won Friday, and it was frustrating.
and what's interesting is a lot of teams are really putting their top guy on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at this, this is the Big Ten, but you also keep in mind, I mean, look at what Michigan State did this past weekend. You know, we all talk about how much we love the pitching depth. It's turning out that a lot of teams have pitching depth. This extra year of eligibility, this guy's not getting drafted,
mm-hmm.
and fairly lax transfer rules. It's all leading to there's a lot of pitching out there. I mean, honestly, I was relatively impressed with what Purdue managed to put together. And yes, their numbers had been atrocious before this weekend. But like 1-7
coming in.
Yeah. But also, I mean, the ERAs were, but guys with these, plus six plus ERAs, we're doing rather well against IU, but I think part of it is that, before 3 weeks ago, they hadn't pitched a D1 game yet. Yeah. So they've got some experience under their belt and they're able to say, okay, slow the game down a little bit, pitching's pitching. And
I hope we see some more fastballs this weekend. I'll tell you that. I seen enough slop for last weekend. Jeez.
I don't think that's stopping Chris.
I know. It's garbage, though. I mean, it's like a carnival game or something. Like, because they can throw these. I don't know.
But then at the same time, you know what? You're going to run into a guy who's going to do that. And then, hey, if they can't control that off-speed pitch, if our guys can continue to be smart and lay off that pitch, get those walks, force them to occasionally throw that fastball, and then kill them with it. It may be a little nerve-wracking, but somehow it just seems to work.
I could see three close games this weekend. I really could. I have a much different look at this weekend coming in. And like you said, Carl, with Ohio State, these are six. Like, if you want to combo them together before we get back home, I would take 3-3. Give me 3-3. Give me a series win and a series loss. I wouldn't get greedy having to win both of these.
Yeah. Well, and again, it just also depends. It's so hard because you say, well, what, you know, what teams are good? You know, what's a good win? What's a good loss? You know, I think this Purdue team is going to win some games. They've had a remarkably tough schedule up to this point. Yeah. I think Purdue's going to win some baseball games. You know, we were scratching our heads after that first game against Rutgers. But I think Rutgers is going to finish in the top half of the league.
Had me more. I'm confused. We knew that guy was somewhat of an arm for Rutgers. We knew that.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they've split with Maryland. They took a series from Ohio State. So
unbelievable.
Rutgers looks legit. So So I was looking at this schedule thinking, oh, this is, you know, up to this point, this has been a chump schedule. Kind of thinking at the beginning of the season was thinking Michigan State was going to be part of that chump schedule. I don't now. I think Michigan State is already proven.
I agree.
They're at the very least, they're a middle tier player, if not better. So of course this is going to get fun. And the question is, you know, can this is an opportunity though for IU to distinguish itself and try to say that, hey, yeah, that's the case. I mean, do what Northwestern did to this team. and honestly, I don't have a good picture at this point. I really don't. I don't have a good picture as to where the end of this is going to be. And, you know, there's going to be some luck involved. You know, as we've seen, you know, what week do you face the team at what stage they are in their year-long development? May end up determining who is the team that's going to end up getting this league crown. I like the fact that Indiana's at the top of the heap right now. You know, but there's a lot of teams that are going to be competing for it, and they're all going to get a crack at IU as well. Most of them are. Actually, I think any of the teams that are going to be competitive are going to get a crack at IU. So, and you're going to assume that teams are going to give IU their best shot.
Yeah, we're not sticking up on anybody this year.
Yeah.
So much. Especially with all the stats coming out. Do you see these stats coming out for the pitchers, though? We're like, we lead the league in ERA. We lead the league in runs. Okay, we didn't start for a while, and we don't play the SEC. Like, buddies of mine in New York are like, yo, IU base is legit this year. Like, I'm seeing this stuff coming out, and it's not even from an Indiana account. I'm like, well, the numbers are in fact true. But, you know, there's that other side.
Yeah.
But that also doesn't let you sneak up on anybody because it is hitting the national wires. And it, you know, it is there's a little difference, though, when you don't play as many games and who you're playing.
Yeah. You know, Purdue had to feel good. Purdue had to feel good beating the National Player of the Week. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't think we mentioned it yet, but I know we're soon to wrap up, but I wanted to get it in there that Kendall Rogers announced that we've been invited to the to that baseball event with Arkansas, Stanford, and Louisiana Tech. It is right, I believe it's
Louisiana the Round Tech. Rock.
Rock event. And the stadium looked beautiful. It's got to be a minor league stadium for somebody. I'm not sure what affiliate it is, but I was looking at some of the photos, and I like to see, you know, Marcy's already, you know, well, I can't even imagine some of the stuff he had set up for this year. I know he had some good stuff. And seeing Kendall Rogers announce that we've gotten invited to this event, is it a top-tier event? No, but it's a very nice event. It's great to see Indiana's name up there. And hopefully it's up there beating Stanford, too.
Yeah, I would definitely have no problem seeing IU beat Stanford. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Cass, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I will say it was great to be able to get to the BART in a media capacity and keep a live scorecard there. It's been more than 2 years since I've kept a live scorecard at the BART. Because when I come as a fan, I enjoy the experience and being around everybody. So it was nice to be able to do that again and to catch a fantastic game.
You were at the best one, that's for sure.
Yes. And so I was really grateful to have that opportunity. And so that'll probably be my final thought for this week.
All right, Chris.
Just looking forward to us hitting the road, not us personally, but the team hitting the road. And, you know, it was a different experience at the BART as a pure media member. And yes, I did get to cheer. I snuck some cheers in after the national anthem. I'm glad you caught on that. It was really different. And I'm not going to say enjoyed it. It was definitely different. I'm so grateful to be there. But I feel like now when we go to the road games, that's like what we're used to, right? We're used to that, following on the road. Hopefully we can get a good broadcast or a good radio. I hope we got some good stuff. And obviously we'll send stuff out as best we can. Let's hope. Here's to a good play-by-play guy for those who like to watch. I know I'll be listening. I always do the listen move, and we know Render's great. So I look forward to hearing him for the weekend.
Cool. Yep. I think I've expressed everything I want to express this week. So I'm very interested in this series. As I said, I think this is going to be, I honestly don't know what to expect from Michigan State. So that makes it interesting.
Okay. Well, I think that'll do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. You can read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com. And follow us on Twitter at CU at the BART and at IUBase17. On Instagram, it's IUBase. And you can subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube, which has these video podcasts, game clips, media availabilities, and more. For Carl James and Chris Feeney, I'm Cassidy Palmer, and we look forward to the day that we can see all of you at the BART.